Raffles by E.W. Hornung, a series of short stories dramatized for radio by David Buck, with Jeremy Clyde as Raffles, Michael Cochran as Bunny, and Anton Lesser as Medlicott. A Bad Night.
Damnation!
What is it, Raffles?
I've been selected for the second test.
My congratulations, AJ.
It's not a matter of congratulations at all. It throws all my plans out of kilter.
Plans? What plans?
Oh, nothing that need concern you.
Well, if it's so important, can't you refuse?
Refuse? You mad, Bunny. One doesn't refuse a call like this. England is in trouble. I have to play.
That settles it, then.
Well, I won't deny I'm pleased to be asked. I haven't thought to be called upon again. It's just so damned annoying the match falls on that particular day.
Oh? What day is it?
The third Thursday in July.
I knew better than to ask what business Raffles had in mind for the third Thursday in July. He would tell me eventually, if he felt I should be told, but he would never respond to cross-examination. I therefore bided my time, relaxing into one of the comfortable armchairs in his chambers and picking up a newspaper. Raffles, for his part, lit a Sullivan and paced the room like a tiger.
It wouldn't worry me if we weren't so hard up. Oh, forgive me, Bunny. I'm bad company today.
Not at all, old chap.
No, I am. I know it. It's just so deuced frustrating. I planned the job down to the last detail, you see, and now it's scuppered.
Now, when you say job, Raffles, I assume you mean...
The sort of work you wot of, Bunny. And never more pressing.
Well, can't it simply be postponed?
I'm not a hopo, man.
Well, perhaps you'd better tell me the whole thing, AJ.
There was something I was going to keep you out of, Bunny. Now I've had to draw stumps on it, I suppose there's no harm in your knowing.
Thank you very
much. I'll explain, and then you'll understand. Imagine, if you will, a mellow hermitage on the banks of the Mole. Living there, the family Medlicott. Does the name mean anything to you?
No, I can't say it does. Well, unless you mean that young...
Exactly what I do mean. Young Spadger Medlicott. The most promising university bat in a dozen years.
But didn't he...
Yes, he ran into a bit of financial trouble a few years ago.
Yes, I remember. He took the coward's way out. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's no need to look at me like that, AJ. I am a privileged speaker. You forget that Spatter and I belong to a very exclusive club. I declared my membership on Waterloo Bridge not much above a year ago.
At the Ides of March. I haven't forgotten.
I found a friend when I needed one. Young Medlicott did not, apparently.
Well, he turned to his family, what was left of it. His parents were dead. His expectations lay with an uncle who had acquired a vast fortune making patent bedsteads.
And he would not help.
He laughed him out of the house.
And may I assume this house lies on the banks of the Mole?
You may, Bunny. You may.
So, this intended exploit
is in the nature of a grudge match.
I understand. But why is the date so important? I mean, surely you can rifle the possessions of Mr. Patent Bedsteads any time you wish.
Well, not to such effect. The Medlicotts are blessed with issue. One son, a sickly, asthmatic fellow by all accounts, and a buxom young daughter. Now, the girl is to be married. The groom-elect is a prosperous son of the same suburban soil. Mm. The knot is to be tied at Hampton. And so copious is the number of the expected guests that for the ensuing shenanigans, old Peyton Bedsteads has been forced to hire a local hall.
Ah.
The house on the Mole will be empty for several hours that night, except for some slumbering servants, and the wedding presents. Now, these are of an intrinsic value worth a special transaction with the Colossus Burglary Insurance Company of Cheapside.
Raffles, how the deuce did you find all this out?
You must allow me some secrets, old man.
Yes. But may I assume the date of the wedding is...
The third Thursday in July.
And the test starts on
the third Thursday in July.
Well, perhaps you could...
But Old Trafford, I know you have a very rudimentary idea of the game, Bunny, but I guess even you know that Old Trafford happens to be inconveniently sighted in the foothills of Mancunium.
200 miles away.
As the rook takes wing.
Well, I can understand your frustration, AJ.
Well, no use crying about it. I must concentrate on the other things, see if I can't do the old country proud.
Raffles?
Yes, my dear fellow?
If you've researched this business so thoroughly...
Every last detail, old man.
Wouldn't it be possible for me to undertake it?
What? Alone?
Well, you said yourself it was a simple job.
Couldn't be easier.
Well, you see, that business with Sudbury's bag,
I really thought I let you down, Elizabeth.
Oh, don't give it another thought, Bunny old.
No, I would be grateful for the chance to redeem myself.
Well, if that's really how you feel...
Yes, it is. It is.
I suppose I could give you a bit of coaching. Yes, now I come to think of it, there's really no reason why you shouldn't try this one on your own. Excellent. Let's have a drink on it.
Here was the opportunity I had dreamed of, to prove that in suburban Surrey, if not at Old Trafford, I was quite capable of filling his shoes.
Tomorrow I'll take you down to East Molesey and show you the place. We'll go over every foot of ground together. Preparation, Bunny. That's the secret of this one.
Now, you must allow me a little escape of my own, Raffles. I'm not simply a puppet, you know.
You'll find there's plenty of room to improvise. There always is, you know. Now,
well,
don't worry, Bunny. The last thing I wish to do is rob you of your moment of glory.
I had the unpleasant feeling that I was being ragged. But Raffles' smile only increased my determination to pull off a coup worthy of our long association. The days flew by, and the morning of the third Wednesday of July found me bidding farewell to my friend and mentor through a carriage window as he prepared to depart for Manchester and the second test.
Don't treat the thing too lightly, Bunny. There's a fair chance the Colossus will have a man about the place.
I'll take care, I promise.
And don't be tempted to take a revolver. Here are the keys to my bureau. There's an old life preserver tucked away in there somewhere.
As he gave me his final instructions, I felt a strange resentment rising in my throat. I was his right hand, and yet he never hesitated to make me his cat's paw. This time, I thought as I took the cab from Euston to my rooms at Mount Street, this time at least I should be neither one nor the other. I was the understudy playing the lead at last, and I did not think that even Raffles could ever comprehend the gusto with which I intended to throw myself into the part. Thus I was first out of a crowded theatre train at Esher that following evening, and first down the stairs into the open air. The night was close and cloudy, and the road to Hampton Court, even though the suburban builder has marked so much of it for his own, is one of the darkest I know.
Whistle. Yes, that's the thing to do, whistle.
The first mile is still a narrow avenue, a mere tunnel of leaves at midsummer, but at that time there was not a lighted pane or cranny by the way. Naturally, it was in this blind reach that I fancied I was being followed. I stopped in my stride, and so did the steps I was sure I heard not far behind. And when I went on, they followed suit. Perhaps it was simply an echo, but I lost no time in getting quit of the avenue and coming out upon the straight and open road. On the bridge across the mole, I encountered a policeman.
Evening, sir.
Eh? Yes. Good evening.
Lovely night.
Yes, it is. Yes, lovely. No question. Beautiful. Sublime.
You all right, sir?
Yes, quite all right. Thank you.
I prudently affected to turn right at the bridge end, as if proceeding in the direction of Hampton Court Palace. Then, when I was sure the constable had moved on, retraced my steps and set off in the direction of East Molesey. At last, I crept in at a garden gate and round by darkened windows to a back lawn drenched with dew. I felt in need of a rest before taking off my shoes and proceeding across the gravel to the conservatory door, beyond which the treasures lay. Feeling more like my friend and mentor by the minute, I allowed myself to be tempted by the comfort of a garden seat, conveniently placed beneath the spreading branches of a cedar. There I felt confident enough to strike a match on my trousers and light one of the shorter Sullivans, less on account of my need for a smoke than for my future delight in relating to Raffles himself this particular proof of my newfound sang-froid.
Who on earth are you? Who's there? Answer me.
I'm a detective, sent down from the Colossus Burglary Insurance Company of Cheapside.
The understudy had spoken the first few lines of his prepared part. That much, at least, was behind me. I screwed up my eyes against the darkness to see where this strange and labored voice had come from. At last, I spied an open window and a pale face, and I guessed that I was speaking to the young, asthmatic son of the Medlicott family.
I don't see why they should have sent you down here. We're being quite well looked after by the local police. They're giving us a special call every hour.
I know that, Mr. Medlicott. I met one of them on the corner just now, and we passed the time of day, night.
Did you get my name from him?
No, they gave me that before I started.
Oh. You should have said you were here, you know.
I didn't intend anyone should see me, sir. Well, that's our new policy, you know. The fewer people know I'm here, the better. I'm detailed to keep a watch on the place all night, you see. But if you prefer me to keep off the actual premises, you only have to say...
No, no, not a bit of it. I should have gone along with the rest of them, but... I felt an attack coming on, and I had no wish to be a spectre at the feast. I dare say I shall have to sit up till morning now. Look, why don't you come up here? I mean, you can see me through. You can sit in comfort and kill two birds while you're about it.
I think...
Hold on there. I'll come down and let you in.
He disappeared from the window, leaving me in a cold sweat at this sudden turn of events. I was glad I had worn the bowler and shabby overcoat Raffles had provided, though this was as far as my disguise went. In all other respects, I resembled only what I was, a neatly groomed man about town with a distinctly nervous pallor. There was a striking of matches behind the leaded windows of an outer door along the path, and when it was opened, it was a figure of woe that stood within and held an unsteady candle between our faces.
Come in.
Thank you, sir.
I have seen old men look half their age and young men look double theirs, but never before or since have I seen a beardless boy bent into a man of 80, gasping for every breath, shaken by every gasp, swaying, tottering and choking as if about to die upon his feet.
Oh, I shouldn't have come down. It made me worse. It'll be worse still going up again. You will keep me company, I hope. Good. Not half as bad as I look, you know. Got some good whiskey, too. I just checked on the presents. They're all right. But if they're not, you'll hear of it indoors sooner than out. Righto! Up the stairs here.
It must have taken us 5 or 6 minutes to climb that single flight of stairs. There was just room for young Medlicott to keep his arm in mine. With the other, he hauled on the banisters. And so we ascended, step by step, a panting pause on each, and a pitched battle for breath on the half-landing. At last we arrived in a cosy library, with an open door leading to a bedroom beyond. The effort had deprived my poor companion of the power of speech. His laboring lungs shrieked like the wind. He could just summon up enough energy to point to the door by which we had entered, and which I shut in obedience to his gestures, and then to the decanter and its accessories on the table. I gave him nearly half a glassful, and his paroxysm subsided a little as he sat hunched in a chair.
I was a fool to turn in when you're in for a bad night. Lying down is the devil. Could you fetch me a cigarette?
Certainly.
No, not those. My special ones over there on the table.
Oh, these.
That's right. And now a match.
He had bitten off each end of the stramonium cigarette and was soon choking himself with the crude fumes which he inhaled in desperate gulps, only to exhale in furious fits of coughing. It seemed less of a remedy than a form of lingering suicide. But by degrees, some slight improvement became apparent, and at length my companion was able to sit upright and to drain his glass with a sigh of rare relief.
Thanks, Wolfley. Pour yourself a glass, do. There's champagne, too, if you prefer it. Bottles of it.
No, whiskey will be fine, thank you.
You know, you don't look a bit like a detective.
Eh? Well, that's part of the skill, you know. There'd be no point putting me in plain clothes if I still looked like what I was. Now, would that?
Yes, I suppose there's something in that. And I must say, it reflects well on the insurance people, getting a man of your class to do their dirty work. But I reckon you didn't foresee this other business. You were a terrific help, you know. I'm very grateful to you.
No, please.
Oh, I say... I don't suppose you happened to bring down an evening paper.
Huh? Oh, no. Or rather, I bought one, but I'm afraid I left it in the train.
Oh, pity. Wanted to know how the test match was going.
Oh, I can tell you that. We went in first.
Oh, no, I've seen the miserable score up to lunch. How many did we scrape altogether?
Well, we're scraping them still, I'm happy to say.
No. How many?
208 for 7.
Golly. Who made the stand?
Well, Raffles, for one. He was 62, not out of close of
purse. Oh, good for him. Isn't that just like the great AJ, chosen last and as a bowler man, yet he can still teach him a lesson at the crease? He's the cricketer for me, by Jove. I say, let's have another drink in his honour.
Gladly.
Well, here's luck to AJ Raffles. And may he get his century in the morning.
Yeah. To AJ.
You know, I've often thought how grand it would be to know someone like Raffles. I'm a great believer in friendship, though I'm denied a wide circle of friends myself. I believe the friendship of a great man must rub off on a chap, make him a better person himself. Don't you agree?
Yes, it can happen.
Well, take the case. Amel, get my... Amel, tin, on the shelf.
This?
No.
Oh, this man.
Yes. Did you bring one of those things?
Like this?
Yes, that's right. That's right. Now, give it to me. Give it to me. The amel takes the blood from the heart, clears the whole shell for the moment. And, I say, what's up? You're listening to something. What is it?
I thought I heard a noise below.
A policeman?
No, indoors. In the room below.
I heard nothing.
Yes, there it is again. Did you hear it?
Yes. Look out of the window there. See if there's a light.
Right.
Can you see anything?
I think... No, it's black as pitch.
Now, wait. What is it?
I thought I saw a glimmer of a... Yes, by Jove, there it is again.
What?
Someone's down there with a light.
That's one of the rooms where the presents are.
You're sure it couldn't be?
One of the servants? No. We have heard them go downstairs. Look, anyway, no one has any business to be sneaking around down there at this hour of the night.
No, it's a thief and a mistake.
Well, what shall we do about it?
Leave it to me.
But I'd like to come.
No, I'm sorry, but... Well, your breathing will give us away. You know, there's a right way to tackle this, as I've learned from experience.
You've done this sort of thing before.
Well, in a way. Another principle is to sneak up on a man before he turns round. What am I standing here talking for? I'll go down directly and catch him red-handed.
Wait!
What is it?
Take this. You may need it.
Good Lord.
Careful, it's loaded.
What on earth are you doing with a loaded gun?
I snatched it up when I saw you in the garden. I wasn't at all sure of you, you know. Not for some time. Well, I thought you might well be... Oh, never mind what I thought. I know now you're the truest and kindest of fellows.
I...
Well, don't just stand there with your mouth open. Take the thing.
I can't.
You need some means of protecting yourself.
I have a life preserver.
Good Lord. What a wicked-looking object. Do they issue you with that?
Yes.
Well, I prefer a revolver myself, but you know best. It's your job, after all.
Yes, it's my job. Well, I'll go now. Hang on to that pistol. If there's a scrap and I get the worst of it, you may have to use it.
Righto. The best of luck. Shake my hand, will you? You're a good fellow. Do you know... I just realized I don't even know your name.
No, you don't.
You may well imagine with what mixed feelings I descended the stairs. Suffice it to say that fear and shame predominated. Fear of what lay ahead, and shame for what lay behind.
He shook my hand. Now that handshake has to be earned, Bunny, old man.
And yet, was I not about to prevent the very crime that I had been intent upon an hour before?
Oh, it's all too confusing. I must concentrate on the matter in hand.
What would Raffles think of me now, I wondered, on the Lee side of the law for once in my life? I could imagine those dark brows raised, and the familiar smile at once mocking and quizzical, and his cool eye of appraisal. But I was sure he would understand my action, if only in terms of annihilating the competition.
Now, down the stairs one at a time, close to the wall where the planks are nailed.
I descended in silence. There was a door open in the hall, and now there was no mistake. A light was burning within, which did not flicker as I slid silently into the room. There was my quarry upon his knees with his back to me, stowing something into a bag. I hesitated for a moment, unwilling to hit an unsuspecting fellow creature. Then suddenly, he turned upon me with bared teeth. I saw his evil face and did not hesitate.
You blackguard! Well, it was either him or me. Something burning. Good heavens, he's been working with a candle stuck inside an opera hat, exactly the same as Raffles. Raffles? Raffles!
Is everything all right?
What? Oh, yes.
Have you dealt with the villain?
Yes, he's dealt with all right.
Can I come in?
Oh, I suppose so.
What did you do? Hit him on the head?
Yes.
Well done. I say, he's not dead, is he?
No. Hey? What did you say?
He looks awfully still.
Ralph!
Why did you say that?
What?
Ralph.
I didn't say Ralph.
Yes, you did. I heard you.
I didn't say Ralph. I said Riff.
Riff?
Riff Raff.
Oh, Riff Raff. Well, he's certainly that. I've never seen anyone so evil-looking. And look at the state of his clothes. I feel almost sorry for him.
So do I.
If he's alive, of course.
Oh. Yes, he's alive, thank goodness.
You must have hit him pretty hard. I'm glad you didn't have to fight him.
Why not?
Well, frankly, I don't think you'd have won. And then I would have had to shoot him, and that would have landed us both in a pretty pickle.
Oh, look here, I think he's recovering. And if he should come round, well, that is, suddenly, I'm not sure we'll be able to hold him.
No, he's a powerful-looking brute. But I suppose you could always hit him over the head again.
I'm afraid that wouldn't be ethical.
Oh, pity.
But look, that policeman of yours can't be too far away. Do you feel up to going to look for him?
Well, I suppose so. To tell the truth, I feel better than I've done all evening. The excitement, I suppose. But wouldn't it be better if you went for the bobby while I stay here with the revolver?
No.
Why?
It's against the rules to hand a criminal over once he's been apprehended.
Oh.
Except to the police, of course.
Do you have a lot of rules? Very well. I'll go while I'm still feeling fit, eh? Before my poor old patch strike up another tune.
The Raffles. Raffles. Two, Bunny. Mine own familiar friend.
Oh, then you were stunned. Thank heavens for that.
Well, of course I was stunned, you damn fool. And no thanks to you, I wasn't brained. Why didn't you recognize me? You must have seen this kid a dozen times.
Raffles, you were the last person I was expecting to see. I don't even know what I'd have done if I had recognized you.
Arrested me on the spot and made our exit arm in arm. Oh, really, Bunny, don't you ever learn anything?
Raffles, you were meant to be in Manchester. All the papers said you were in Manchester in the middle of knocking up some tidy runs for England.
So I was, my dear fellow. But rain stop plays, it's rather apt to do in Manchester. At five, I was on my way back to the hotel, wondering how you were feeling about your solo escapade, and yes, I suppose, worrying about you a little, and before I knew it, I found myself in the restaurant car, scurrying home.
I see.
Now, there's a 312 from Surbiton, which we could catch on all fours if the forces of law don't interfere with our plans. We shall be at Waterloo just after 3:30, and that will give me an hour at the Albany on my way to Euston, and another hour at Old Trafford before play begins.
Raffles, please hurry.
One moment, my dear fellow. Young Medlicott's not exactly winged mercury, you know, and I have to get rid of this Newgate fringe. It wouldn't fail to raise eyebrows, even in Surbiton.
Come on, AJ.
Right. Oh, I almost forgot. Pick up that bag, will you? There's a sword. The very head in front of our business lies in there, although I have to admit it's rather a disappointing haul. The bride must have leapt straight from the altar and into her trinkets. Dash bad form, but probably par for East Mosey. Come along, old man, don't dawdle!
We left the darkened house undetected and made our way over a dozen garden walls and down a long alley before proceeding by various zigzag routes to Thames Ditton and thence to Surbiton. We walked in silence, bought our tickets with a minimum of instruction, and once on the train...
Raffles, there's one thing I want to ask you. Raffles?
He slept from Surbiton to Waterloo, slept on the cab to the Albany, then slumbered for an hour in his bed. I accompanied his sleeping form to Euston and deposited him on a train. And I have no doubt he slept all the way to Manchester and in the cab to Old Trafford. But once at Old Trafford, Raffles did not sleep, as the Australians found to their cost.
Ah, Well, it says here, AJ, that it was the match of your life.
Well, perhaps the good old Morning Post got it right for once.
Well, it must be true if it's in the Post, Raffles. Oh, I say. Yeah, there's a piece in here about our other escapade.
East Molesey Treasure? Oh, yes, I saw it.
Raffles, I must know the truth.
Ah, what is truth, said Jesting Pilot?
Well, fire away. Why did you really come back? Was it because you were worried about me, or because you didn't trust me, or because you always intended to do the job yourself?
Hmm? I cannot tell a lie, Bunny. It was my concern for you, nothing else.
Are you sure?
Oh, my dear boy, I could have stopped you a dozen times upon your escapade.
How?
On the Hampton Road, for a start. You heard my footsteps, I think. It was careless of me.
That was you?
And when you had words with the policeman and went out of your way, I was able to get ahead. I was in the garden well before you, had a window prized, and was ready to go in when you arrived.
You saw me there?
Of course, dear boy. And when I saw you sitting like that, Sullivan, as if you hadn't a care in the world, I felt a distinct sense of pride in my pupil. Though you must promise me never to do such a thing again.
I don't think I want to go through any of it again, Raffles. And I want to forget it as soon as possible. As far as I'm concerned, it was a bad night all round.
Well, not so bad as all that. We avenged young Spadger. That was the main point of the exercise. As for our haul, we missed the trinket, certainly, but there's one or two items here that were well worth the taking. These emerald links and this diamond comb are very bonny. And then there's this old silver skewer, too. I've been wanting one for years. They make the most charming paper knives in the world. And what about this little gold cigarette case? Don't you want it? Ideal for your smaller Sullivans, I'd have thought. No? Well, then, what about...
Raffles. Now, these are trinkets. And even if we gained a king's ransom, I still feel terrible about the way I betrayed the trust of that poor, asthmatic creature. Why, it says here in the paper that it took him 30 minutes to get help. I mean, I can imagine him wheezing his way through the night, and all for my benefit.
I shouldn't feel too badly about it if I were you, Bunny. Betrayals come in many shapes and forms, you know.
What on earth do you mean?
Well, have you read the description he gave the police?
Of me? No.
It's there. It's in the final paragraph.
What's this? Receding chin, thinning hair, mean little eyes. Not quite a gentleman.
Must be true if it's in the Post, Bunny. And I don't think he was saying those things to put them off your track.
Then deuce take him for an impudent young swine. Raffles?
Yes, old man?
What were you saying about a gold cigarette case?
In A Bad Night by E.W. Hornung, dramatized for radio by David Buck, Jeremy Clyde was A.J. Raffles, and Michael Cochran, Bunny Manders. Medicott was played by Anton Lesser, and the Constable was John Baddeley. The Raffles theme music was composed by Jim Parker. Technical presentation was by Keith Perrin, and the production was by Gordon House.